Welcome to the deep dive. Our mission today is it's a very specific one. We're talking directly to you, church ministers and lay leaders.
Mm-hmm.
We're diving into a resource designed to help you structure your small group study for Lent 2026. You need something fresh, engaging, and honestly, something supportive. And we think this might be it.
I said too.
Our source material is called The Lenten Walk, a six-week journey to mature faith. It's based on the Worship at Hand resources. And what immediately grabbed me was its core premise.
That's pretty bold.
It is. It intentionally moves away from the, you know, the traditional Lenten focus on guilt and shame. The whole theme shifts toward spiritual maturity, responsibility, and discernment. So let's unpack this and see why they call it a faith for grownups.
Well, that phrase right there, a faith for grownups, that's the hook. That's the appeal for leaders who are looking for real substance. This isn't a guilt trip.
No.
It's more like a course correction. The whole program is structured as this transformative journey, a kind of progressive long-distance walk over the 6 weeks.
I like that metaphor.
And the goal isn't just study. It's designed to push participants to embody this radical, self-emptying love and humble service, framing that as the true alternative to chasing worldly power.
Okay, before we get into the deep theology, let's talk logistics.
Yeah.
Because for busy leaders, that's, you know, that's paramount. Is it usable?
Absolutely.
So it's six sessions, paced at about 45 to 60 minutes each. Pretty standard. But the support materials are what really impressed me.
The whole package?
Yeah. You get a full PowerPoint slideshow, which is a huge time saver for anyone projecting in person or on Zoom. You also get a publicity image, a .jpg, ready to go.
And the permissions are key.
Exactly. The purchasing church gets permission to share extracts with all the participants. That just cuts down on so much administrative headache.
It does. And that ease of use lets the leader really focus on the ideas, which are challenging right from the start. In week one, Lent one, awakening to maturity. What's fascinating here is how it immediately challenges, well, centuries of accepted doctrine about Adam and Eve.
Right. It takes the Genesis story, what most of us just call the fall, and it completely reframes it. It's not a catastrophe that results in this permanent inherited guilt.
Precisely. The resource actually posits it as a necessary awakening.
A growing up moment.
That's the exact phrase they use. It's humanity's transition from innocence to consciousness, which results in moral understanding, in responsibility.
So it's not a defect. It's a development.
Yes. The study even points to Genesis 3, where God says, "Behold, the man has become like one of us, knowing good and evil." It shifts the starting point of Lent away from inherent brokenness toward inherent dignity and potential.
I appreciate that theological risk, but I can already hear the question from a leader. How do you introduce this idea that the fall was an awakening without, you know, causing a huge controversy in a more traditional group?
That's a fair question. And the material gives a really strong pastoral anchor for it. It connects this awakening directly to Jesus's time in the wilderness.
Oh.
So the temptation story isn't just about passing a test. It becomes the model for mature discernment. A leader can frame it this way. Lent is about following Jesus's choice, choosing trust and service over the shortcuts of power and ego.
Ah, so it's not about confessing a shame you inherited.
It's about claiming a maturity you choose now. It grounds the whole thing in action, not just abstract doctrine. It's a call to unlearn shame and embrace your own moral agency.
That sets a really powerful foundation. So if week one is about awakening, then Lent two, Questions in the Shadows seems to dive into the personal cost of that through Nicodemus.
Yes, Nicodemus, who comes to Jesus at night. In the dark.
Which says it all, really.
It does. That darkness highlights that universal conflict, especially for people with status. It's that tension between protecting your reputation and that deep, nagging longing for a real spiritual transformation.
He has all the right answers, but he knows something is missing.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. And Jesus' response to him, "You must be born anew," is so foundational, but it can also be, well, it can be made to sound a bit tame.
Right. How does the study keep it radical?
It stresses that Jesus is calling for a radical reorientation, total vulnerability, not just a few minor improvements. He likens the spirit to the wind, Nima. It's uncontrollable, unpredictable. You can't manage it.
You just have to trust it.
You have to trust the messy process of growth.
But asking people to embrace that kind of vulnerability, that sounds pastorally intense. Where's the safety net that stops people from just feeling lost?
And that's where the structure is just brilliant. It balances the vulnerability. A session pairs the challenge of Nicodemus with the assurance of Psalm 121.
He who watches over you will not slumber.
Exactly. God as a constant, vigilant protector. And the study's clear, this isn't helicopter parenting. It's a deep companionship that offers freedom within a secure relationship. The message is, you can let go because you are held.
That's a beautiful pastoral move. And that journey of vulnerability continues right into Lent 3, subversive grace at the well.
It does. This is where the walking metaphor steps right out into the scorching midday sun.
And it becomes a turning point. We see Jesus acting as this subversive agent of grace.
Completely subversive. He initiates a conversation with a Samaritan woman. That alone breaks cultural, gender, and religious taboos.
Yeah.
But then he places himself in her debt. He asks her for a drink.
That act alone just affirms her dignity, a total reversal of the power dynamics.
And the study highlights the symbolism of when she arrives, right? She comes at noon, the hottest part of the day.
Uh-huh.
It suggests she was isolated, maybe carrying a lot of shame.
Trying to avoid the crowds.
Yes. And this same isolated woman becomes the very first evangelist in John's gospel. The study points to that specific detail of her leaving her water jar behind.
A really powerful symbol for a group to discuss.
It's about letting go of the old burdens and labels that defined her. The application is so clear. Transformation often begins at the margins, and our most powerful witness grows out of authentic lived experience, not some position of authority.
That moves us so well into the second half of the walk, Lent 4, a new way of seeing. This session really challenges our assumptions about status and power.
The contrast they use is just so stark. You have the story of Samuel choosing David.
Yeah. Human eyes see the older brothers. They look the part. They're impressive.
But God's vision goes right past them to David, the youngest, the one who wasn't even invited. It affirms that God looks on the heart, not the outward appearance. It's a direct instruction to stop trusting surface-level judgments.
And this theme of seeing differently is then cemented with the story of the man born blind. This feels like a critical theological move.
Oh, it's huge, because it directly confronts that framework that links suffering with punishment.
Who sinned, this man or his parents?
Exactly. And Jesus just refuses the premise of the question. He rejects that punitive logic.
Hmm.
And for modern conversations around trauma or illness, that's such a compassionate counter-narrative. He responds not with an explanation, but with connection.
And with earthy embodied actions, mud and water.
It's tangible. It's messy. And the resource connects this to a specific call to action for groups. It introduces the Maori concept of mana kitanga.
Tell us about that.
It's often translated as hospitality, but it's deeper. It's the sacral duty of uplifting the dignity of others. That's the key application. Our job as a community is to actively recognize and affirm the humanity in everyone, especially those who've been ignored.
That's a powerful challenge. From there, we move into Lent 5, Hope Beyond the Grave, which feels essential for a mature Lenten journey. It tackles loss and grief head on.
And it does so masterfully by pairing two stories. You get the collective grief of Ezekiel's vision of the very dry bones, that cry of national despair.
And then you get the intensely personal grief in the story of Lazarus.
Right. And for anyone in ministry, the most crucial insight is how Jesus responds.
He weeps.
He weeps, even though he knows resurrection is moments away. This is so vital. It validates our sorrow. It shows that divine power doesn't just bypass human grief. Tears and hope can coexist.
The process is honored.
It is. And there's a community element to this story that the study really highlights.
Which connects back to that idea of shared maturity.
Yes. Resurrection is shown to be a shared task. Jesus calls Lazarus out of the tomb, but he doesn't do it all.
He tells the others to unbind him.
Unbind him and let him go. He calls the community to participate in one another's liberation. It moves the group from just being passive observers to being active ministers to each other.
That is just profound. And it brings us to the end of the walk, to Lent 6, the way of the donkey, Jesus' entry into Jerusalem.
Which is so often sentimentalized, but the study frames it as a deeply political act.
Protest.
Theater. That's the term. It's intentional resistance. You have to picture the Roman governor entering the city on a massive war horse, a symbol of imperial might. Jesus enters from the other side on a humble donkey, a symbol of peace. It's an intentional mockery of Rome's power.
The choice of the lowest place.
That's the choice that ties the entire six-week journey together. The final session uses that beautiful hymn in Philippians 2 to explain this path. The idea of kenosis Christ, choosing to empty himself of privilege. It invites the group into that demanding faith for grown-ups that is willing to live with tension and choose humility over prestige and control.
So let's bring it all together. If you're a leader organizing for Lent 2026, what does this resource really deliver?
Well, it's so much more than 6 weeks of discussion questions.
Right. It feels like it's designed to facilitate those genuine aha moments, the kind that actually stick with people.
And crucially, it gives you a coherent arc focused on growth and responsibility, not on shame. The usability is just, it's all there. A summary, great questions, a prayer, a blessing for every single session.
So leaders can trust the material and focus on facilitating that deep, honest conversation.
Exactly.
The Lenten Walk really does offer a fresh, challenging, and pastorally sensitive way to look at these texts. And now as we wrap up, here's one final thought for you to consider based on all this.
Mm-hmm.
If the story of humanity is truly one of awakening, not catastrophe, how does embracing that perspective change the kind of bold purpose and the willingness to accept risk that's required in your leadership today?